Hi, this is your host, Sapin Bhartia, and welcome to TFR Insights. And today we have with us Michael Izbitsky, Technical Evangelist at Salt Security. And we are going to talk about, you know, a new vulnerability that was discovered for GraphQL API. But before we go there, Michael, first of all, it's great to have you on the show. We have covered Salt on a regular basis, but quickly tell us, what does Salt do?
Yeah, thanks, Vapno. It's great to be here. So Salt Labs is actually our threat research division. Salt Security actually creates a API protection platform, provides full lifecycle detection and protection capabilities for all types of APIs. Salt Labs specifically does threat research on all things APIs. Launched it, I think it was around July timeframe. There's been a few threat research reports that we've published. And most recently, we had the GraphQL authorization flaws, which we're going to be talking about today. But Salt Labs, like any kind of threat research division, they're actively looking for known types of weaknesses. You know, it's substantially different than something like Log4j, which, you know, we just saw very recently. But, you know, known vulnerabilities that end up with common vulnerabilities and exposures, CVE IDs. In this world, we're kind of looking for kind of unknowns, right? You might say there's 0 days, but it's misconfigurations, misimplementations, design flaws, poor coding practices, right? It can be any number of things that lead to an attackable API or abusable API.
Excellent. Thanks for, of course, explaining what the research lab does at Salt Security. If I ask you, though, from your perspective, especially when we look at, you know, the whole threat, you know, or, you know, attack surface in the cloud native space, it has been changing. We have, you know, I think we started talking about security like 2 or 3 years ago. If you go to KubeCon, you'll see a lot of, you know, sessions were there about security. So it does appear that, you know, the community is taking security seriously. They are talking about all about it. But there's a difference in having awareness about it, talking about it, versus implementing it in, you know, practice. So what have you seen, you know, especially when we do look at, you know, the whole research lab that was set up there at Salt?
Very good question. And actually, prior to joining Salt Security, as a technical evangelist, I was a former industry analyst with Gartner. And prior to that, a security practitioner. So I've seen quite a bit in my time. Getting back to your question, though, there's definitely a lot more awareness around API security issues, but we are actually seeing a lot of the same mistakes, unfortunately. We'll probably talk a little bit about it today, but OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project, they have a project dedicated to API security issues. They created the top 10 for APIs 2019. And it's actually held very accurate, you know, so we see a lot of those same issues. We saw those same things in this GraphQL recent threat research report, but they're, you know, seemingly simple mistakes, you know, kind of tie back to authentication and authorization quite frequently, or related to business logic or exposing too much data. But you know, the mistakes are pretty common, right? It's not so much that we're seeing, injection style attacks, right? Those are still pervasive, certainly in the application space with cross-site scripting or SQL injection. And, you know, I mentioned Log4j, right? That's specifically injection type flaw, but actually a lot of the API attacks, much more frequently target the business logic or authentication and authorization mechanisms.
And since we, you know, briefly touched upon awareness, you know, NSA also came up with Kubernetes hardening guidance, you know, which is of course all about API. So there is a lot of, you know, awareness going on there. What does that mean for Salt Security? You know, because like, you know, as I said, you know, detecting threat is, you know, one part of the problem, but actually helping users is second part of the problem. And third part of the problem is to actually bring it in their culture itself. We do talk about DevSecOps and SREs and everything else, but so can you talk about these three stages?
Yeah, so a lot of what I do at Salt is raising the awareness, right? So it's a lot of what I'm a little bit of the public face of the company, you might say, with the content that we create and awareness materials, threat research reports that certainly help kind of talk about these publicly. We've created sets of best practices. We've created evaluation tools if you are looking at specific tooling to help with API security. you know, so I think part of your question, Swapnil, is, you know, it's bigger than just selecting tools. So how are we helping on that front? I mean, it's continuously educating, right? When there is a public incident, some of what I do is actually kind of acknowledge that, right? Well, we had a problem. It's really not helpful to say it's poor coding practice, right? Quickly dismiss it. Like the devil's in the details, right? What are the nuances? Why did this happen? So I try to do a little bit of investigation, kind of dig in. What were the flaws? Do they map to the OWASP top 10, or was it something more? What are potential business impacts, right? That's something that's often missing when you read about security incidents. Maybe it's too much technical detail, not enough of like kind of the business context, right? And that's important as a practitioner, right? You have so many fires you're dealing with, you can't address them all. You have to prioritize things. So what is the potential business impact to your organization? And then what are the things you can do to actually work on the problem, right? I love to say, you know, purchase the Salt Security API Protection Platform, but not everybody necessarily has the budget yet for that. But there are some things you can do to kind of mitigate, right? Raise the bar for attackers, make that a little bit more difficult for them to exploit or abuse your APIs.
It's not a good thing, but we have a use case here which we can discuss to not only get deeper into how, of course, Salt Labs work, but also how you help a customer, which is, you know, you folks recently uncovered GraphQL API authorization vulnerability. So this will actually help us understand a lot of things. So first of all, tell us what it is, how it affects organizations who are using GraphQL, because that's what you talk about, right? We have to assess, you know, the impact on the business. So let's start there.
Yeah. And I mean, we could take a few steps back, right? Like, why are organizations even adopting GraphQL as opposed to REST APIs? You know, we're seeing it because there's benefits to front-end design. You know, typically that's performance or functionality, right? You could create kind of more responsive user interfaces. Typically that's a mobile app. Right, which is kind of why Facebook created the technology originally and then open sourced it. But we're seeing a lot of adoption of GraphQL just because it can help, you know, vastly improve user experience as opposed to REST API calls, which you might say are too chatty, right? We have to invoke too many of them to fetch a piece of data or provide a piece of functionality to that that application front end. So, I mean, that's the business case for GraphQL. The problem with GraphQL, it's kind of, you wouldn't say a design flaw because it's actually by design, but, you know, GraphQL allows you to nest multiple queries, mutate queries, right? So you, as a end user, you submit one request to that GraphQL endpoint, and then in the back end, there's, you know, GraphQL server, and then that fires off any other number of API calls to complete the function, right, and provide you the piece of data you need. So there's a lot of actually added complexity that starts to come into the fold when organizations adopt GraphQL, right? And it's not just GraphQL. They are still keeping REST as well. So you have this combination of protocols and API design types. So as you can imagine, right, it kind of creates some complexity. If you think about if I'm able to nest multiple API calls in one GraphQL call, that can get a little hairy, right? Because depending on what piece of data I'm fetching, do I know that that end user is authorized to that piece of data or functionality, right? And if you think of, you know, even a small handful of APIs nested within that GraphQL call, it can be a problem, right? And we've actually seen even issues with Facebook where they've had issues with their GraphQL API not properly authorizing API callers. So those kind of authorization flaws are kind of inherent, right? There's much higher likelihood that the API designers are going to make those mistakes, which is exactly what we saw in this particular piece of threat research, which was with a fintech platform, but they had architected their GraphQL API, which was worked in tandem with the mobile app front end. And then users would kind of invoke things that way, and you know, lo and behold, the GraphQL API was not properly verifying authorization levels of that user, two different pieces of data. So in the OWASP language, that's referred to as broken object level authorization. But, you know, plain and simple, it's an authorization flaw. The API caller, what they are authenticated for in their session, You are entitled to certain pieces of data, but what happens with attackers is they can frequently manipulate API calls, you know, parameters in URLs, message bodies, right? It can be different pieces of that API call that they tamper with, and then they can obtain access to other data or functionality.
You touched upon it briefly, but if I ask, you know, as you said earlier, you know, that, you know, customers can go and buy Salt Security, but, you know, not everybody can do that, or, you know, so what are the things that, you know, users can do right now to kind of protect themselves so that, you know, that they are kind of relatively protected from this authorization vulnerability that is there?
I would say most conversations around API security actually start with inventory, right? A lot of our customers, they come to us at first because they just, they acknowledge that they're having a really hard time discovering all of the APIs they have in their enterprise. You know, and even in this case of GraphQL, it's one GraphQL API, but, you know, you're talking tens or hundreds of backend or APIs or REST APIs. You might call them inner APIs, right? It's much more than what most enterprises would think of, right? You know, typically they think of their portfolio in terms of applications, maybe infrastructure, right? Like what servers power all those applications, but very rarely do they think of it in the context of this application is actually built up of these 100 APIs, right? And things are much more integrated than that too. So, you know, one app likely intersects with 10 other applications, you know, particularly when you're working with partners and suppliers. So, you know, APIs are fundamentally the thing you should be looking at, you know, because that's what attackers are targeting. So, you know, inventory is a big one. There are things you can kind of pull in, you know, static data sources. Most organizations are working with API gateways or API management today. You have an API catalog there, hopefully, right? Hopefully you're formally publishing APIs in some way, you know, as part of your API mediation strategy, but that is part of your API catalog. The other way you kind of augment that is load balancers, delivery controllers, maybe you're running forms of vulnerability assessment. You'll be capturing, you know, API calls as part of that typically. The hard part of that kind of manual approach, right, and this is in the absence of tooling, because how you asked me, right, but this is the problem, right? How do you stitch together all that data and how do you know the API context, like, what are the right parameters for a given API? What's the metadata that belongs to that API? That's where organizations typically run into problems. And then API discovery is actually their big business driver for seeking API security tooling. But you know, if the API inventory is a known quantity, you know, it's making sure that access control policies are set correctly. You know, if you are using something like OAuth, revisit scopes. Are they set appropriately? Are they granular enough or are they too coarse grained, right? This can happen very frequently when you talk about that balance of outer and inner API calls, you know, with consumers that are external to your organization, right? You're not dealing with employees within the enterprise. We're dealing with a very large mobile consumer base. And then, you know, other approaches that we often see that don't always work, rate limits, right? It's every gateway is going to provide you a form of rate limiting. Most organizations have challenges scaling them, right? So you need, essentially you need a way to kind of track, what are the normal consumption patterns, right? Like how should this API function and that front end working in tandem with the back end APIs? That's really where you need kind of higher levels of capabilities with data analytics, right? What is the normal baseline? When you detect a deviation, that's typically where you'd want to adjust a rate limit or maybe challenge for additional factors of authentication, right? It can vary depending on how your API is being abused, but it's much more precise, right? We're not just blocking entire IP address spaces, which historically doesn't work, right? An API needs to be available. Users need to be able to use the app. You know, so you have normal consumption and then you have attackers abusing the APIs. It can be very hard to discern which is normal and which is abusive.
Right. And you were talking about inventory. We have also started talking a lot about SBOMs, you know, software bill of materials. Even, you know, Biden administration, they came out with an executive order just around that as well that was mentioned there. Once again, since you work in a space, you know, face of the company to talk, you know, education awareness. How much awareness do you, you also mentioned your companies do want to know, how much awareness is there about, you know, SBOMs, you know, bill of materials, that, you know, there are a lot of open source, SPDX is there and so many other tools are there. Once again, the basic point, we are back to awareness. How much is there and what companies should do?
Yeah, great question, Swapnil. Kind of, and a topic that was near and dear to my heart as an analyst. I did cover kind of open source componentry and how do you get a hold of that. You know, SBOMs can be a way. I mean, the SBOM is the software build materials, like knowing what are all the things that go into all of your applications, but also infrastructure, right? You mentioned Kubernetes, it's built up of components and then it has an API, right? It's declarative infrastructure. Very big problem for a lot of organizations. They were definitely asking those questions around how do I get a handle? And I'd say it kind of started with, I believe it was Equifax, right? When they had, I think it was OpenSSL that they had kind of latent, and then they were breached as a result of that. So that led a lot of organizations start to look at how do I know what is all the open source componentry in use? We're seeing this again, coincidentally, with Log4j, because it is a very similar problem. But SBOMs weren't really solved, right? There is plentiful tooling, but there hasn't been standardization on how componentry is reported. So there's discussion around what should an SBOM contain, not so much formats. You did mention SPDX and software ID is another one, but there hasn't been like universal adoption around these things yet. I do think it's going to come back, right? Because the cybersecurity executive order that the Biden administration put forth, I think it was like May timeframe, talked about some of these concepts within digital supply chains. Because like, this is another problem, right? When you start thinking about where you source componentry from or the third parties you're working from, what are all the pieces of software they're using? This is where SBOMs come back into the picture. So some of that language is in there. So I think we'll see some movement on this front. The problem, you know, if there aren't enough problems with SBOMs other than that data standardization, is that it's too exclusively looking at software as opposed to APIs, right? Because the way a lot of enterprise application development occurs is, you know, we're building web APIs, web applications, mobile apps, and things are stitched together using web APIs. So web APIs haven't become part of that conversation of SBOMs yet that I've really seen, which is unfortunate, right? But you know, at some point, I think we should start seeing that, right? Because that is the supply chain in addition to open source componentry, right? So it's that plus more. So we're on the right path, but there just needs to kind of be a expanded definition of what is a dependency.
Right. When you talk about standardization, I think in September, SPDX became an ISO standard. It was accepted there. So there are a lot of, you know, progress that is happening there. So SPDX becoming ISO standard, it does help. But yes, there are different problems. But the thing is, when you look at cloud native, things are so complicated. There are so many knobs to turn. You don't even know where to look. So that's where, you know, it does help. Sometime, you know, the best solution is to go with a vendor, right? Because then you don't have to do with that. So let's now quickly talk about Salt Security's rule, you know, how you folks help companies, because it's overwhelming, you know, where to look, you know, all you want is to run a business, but you get stuck in so many different things that business becomes the least, you know, on your priority list. So please talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's also a very, very good question, Swapnil. Yeah, and you brought up a good point too, right? Infrastructure as code, which is yet another format, right? YAML, XML, you name it, depends on what's the technology stack you're working in. There's a lot of things that can be done, I'd say, on the left side of the equation, right? And this is, you could group it into shift left. And there's many things we could do as security teams to kind of try to address things early. That's where a lot of these conversations around what does the codified thing look like? Then can we audit that pre-delivery to kind of avoid security issues that could be exploitable or abusable, right? Kind of, it's a security amplifier in a sense. There's a few problems, right? The one is it's very hard to audit all types of code, particularly when you talk about app code versus infrastructure, which is the reality, right? As part of cloud native design, you have to be looking at everything because that it is that combination of application and infrastructure that powers apps and APIs. The reality is there's always a difference between the intended design and the documented design. and then what's actually being built and delivered, right? So at Salt, we stress, you know, certainly look at the left side of the equation, audit your API schema definitions. We have those capabilities. You know, find things that are, you might say, low-hanging fruit even, right? Or maybe it's a simple misconfiguration. There's challenges with specs, though, right? And I talk about this when I speak at other events. You know, there's only so much you have to define in a schema definition, right? It might not even be present. We actually see that pretty commonly in a lot of organizations. Or maybe it's only there at the launch of an API, and then things start to drift, right? Or documentation process falls off, so it becomes stale. So production is always going to look a little bit different than what your intended design. And then it gets worse, right? When you think about partners and suppliers, like, what are they doing? Are they giving you the right things? So, you know, certainly look at the things on the left side to help kind of improve your API security program. But you also have to be looking at the runtime side of the equation, because that's reality, right? That's your production traffic. Can we compare that to the discrepancies that are occurring in build? And, you know, as part of design with schema definitions, absolutely, right? And help you identify that. That's part of our security insights that we, you know, can help development and engineering teams to kind of close that loop, right? Like, let's fix it, kind of improve the security posture of our APIs overall. But it is an ongoing process, right? It's kind of that combination of left, right, and then it is a continuous loop, right? Much more like DevOps itself.
Michael, thank you so much for taking time out today and talk about, of course, not only GraphQL, you know, authorization vulnerability, but also the much larger problem that we are facing in this space and, you know, what you folks at Salt Security are doing to not only help us identify those problems, but also solve them. So thanks for those insights, and I would love to have you back on the show. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Wabo. It's really good to be here. Happy to help anytime. Thank you.